You're in the place where mysteries and the missing meet. Where conspiracies lurk around every corner. Welcome to the Deep Dark Truth.
Welcome back to the Deep Dark Truth. I'm Mo.
I'm Chip.
And I'm Mikey.
And today will be the first installment of an ongoing series that will focus on mythological or lost cities. Mo, you say, if these cities are likely mythological, why discuss them at all?
Have you met this podcast? No one's saying that. No, not a single person listening to this thing.
Oh. Well, I have a spiel, so I need to continue.
You
so.
Two are the
hey,
worst.
Hey, Mo, if these places are probably mythological, why would we discuss them?
Well, let me tell you about Heinrich Schliemann, my man. Heinrich Schliemann. Heinrich Schliemann was a pioneer in archaeology, and he was obsessed with Homer's writings, and he was convinced that the city of Troy existed, even though the people thought that he was like bananas crazy, and most people that did believe that Troy existed, they thought that it was in a completely different location. He ended up not only discovering the location that is modernly thought to be Troy, but he excavated it. He also like shit the bed excavating because they didn't realize that they were already like into the city. So they actually like ruined some stuff, and it's kind of funny. But anyways, he not only excavated it, but he found 9 different cities spanning 3,500 years of time. So cities that had basically fallen into disrepair and they were built on top of rubble of previous cities, if that makes sense. And he found tons of red treasure and artifacts that are nicknamed Priam's treasure, which is after the king of Troy, although the treasure that he found was actually older than Troy. But in conclusion, written history is full of holes left by both time and religious uprisings and the Dark Ages, and questioning, researching, and funding that research is the only way to know anything. So, and talking about it is fun.
That's true.
This entire podcast was mostly created so I could talk about Atlantis, but that's not what we're talking about today. But look out for that. So a lot of these cities have mythology surrounding them that come from completely different parts of the world, which is interesting. And I'm an esoteric at heart, so this is my show. This is what you get. So today we're going to be talking about the hidden city of Agartha. And we're going to start with what makes Agartha unique to other mythological civilizations. So according to folklore surrounding Agartha, Agartha was once an island with advanced technological capabilities for the time. Does this sound familiar? Not at all dissimilar to Atlantis. However, travel to and from this island nation was done primarily through a subterranean tunnel system that connected the island to land, as well as many other branches of said tunnel systems that were on the mainland itself. Then, after some unknown calamity resulting in the destruction of the island, whether that be volcanic eruption, siege, flood, what have you, the citizens of Agartha were forced to flee into the subterranean tunnel system. The inaccessibility of this tunnel system would help protect them, and in utilizing this makeshift underground lair, they decided to rebuild below ground, moving deeper and deeper until, this is where things get shifty, surpassing the Earth's crust.
Well,
that's right. We're talking about Hollow Earth. I have tricked you all here. Welcome to this TED Talk about Agartha.
Are there dinosaurs in there? I hope there are dinosaurs.
While Hollow Earth, a lot of the theories, we're only going to touch on Hollow Earth, but a lot of them do have theories about dinosaurs. This one has mammoths. So not quite, but almost.
Pretty good.
Getting there, but not quite.
Strong second place.
Strong second place. So depending on the sort of lore or conjecture you're reading, Agartha is often spoken or related to or in conjunction with Shambhala. So Shambhala is a spiritual kingdom in the Buddhist tradition that is mentioned in the Kala Chakra Tantras. And it's also spoken of by a different name in Hindu's Vishnu Purana. So what you get is this amalgamation of lore that is Shambhala, Aryavart, Agartha, which is spelt a bunch of different ways, depending on the source, that is just this mixture of things, some of which suggest that Shambhala is actually a city on the landmass or continent known as Agartha. So that brings us back to the Hollow Earth theory, which we have to touch on at least a little bit.
I'm surprised we made it this long without talking about it much.
I've been talking about that I was going to cover different variations of Earth conspiracies, Earth hollow, flat, and holographic, which is what I was researching when I ran into this. And I was like, this feels a little like Atlantis, and I'm going to read about this anyway. So let's write it down. So there are a lot of side rabbit holes to hollow Earth. This is one of them. In terms of a brief synopsis of hollow Earth theory, an early proponent of the hollow Earth theory, Edmund Halley. Yes, that is the same Edmund Halley that Halley's Comet is named after, if you're curious, believed that the Earth was made up of many different shells layered on top of each other. So if you picture the graph of the Earth with its core and outer core and mantle and crust, like that, but much thinner layers than the consensus currently is on the science. He believed that these different shells that were laid on top of each other would move independent from each other in different directions, and at the center of which was a core that acted as a small sun. This would provide daylight and make plant life sustainable deep within the Earth. There are, of course, offshoots of the hollow Earth theory that suggest that it's not the core of the Earth that is hollow, but rather deeper layers of the mantle to the core. And those deeper layers of the mantle are accessible via unknown subterranean caverns. Many conspiracy theorists also believe that the interest that many world powers have in Antarctica are directly tied to the possibility of entrances into hollow Earth or the kingdom of Agartha. How are we feeling? I have just sprung hollow Earth on you. I'm surprised this hasn't went much more poorly.
I feel like I know a lot about planet science, to be honest, more than the average person.
We don't want your science here. Let's talk about Agartha.
I'm just saying, no, there has to be pockets of all different kinds of life from the center to the crust. And that's just how it's gonna has to be, because evolution exists in whatever pocket that it can.
Bring that up later in terms of subterranean layers when I mentioned Mammoth Cave, and we'll talk about the blind fish that exist in the hellish landscape of Mammoth Cave, and how Chip discovered that he is not, in fact, the dwarf that he thought he was all along.
I aspire to it.
We'll do a story time.
We're getting up dangerously close to the deep ocean, which is dangerous territory. We don't want to be there.
No. Nope.
Too deep is too bad.
Too deep is too bad. Bad, too bad for us. Surface
Three bad, five me.
So let's discuss some of the foundation of these conspiracy theories. The first written recording of Agartha came from Louis Jacolio in 1871. He was a historian, travel writer, and French official who lived in India for a time. He wrote different early esoteric works, including Occult Science in India and Among the Ancients, The Bible in India, The Life of Isuis Krishna, The Son of God, as well as dozens of other books. He was at the forefront of rejected knowledge / secret knowledge, which is the foundation of many esoteric concepts. And his writing about Agartha had heavy Norse leanings, despite him rooting many things in Hindu culture and saying that he received a lot of this information from various Brahmin, which is a caste of priests within Hinduism. It's from him that we got the concept of secret masters of the universe and the Brahma being the name of the quote-unquote godlike ruler of Agartha. We'll get there. So let's fast forward a little over a decade. Alexander St. Yves d'Alvandre, who will absolutely be known as Alexander for the rest of this episode. Please don't make me say it again. He was an occultist in 17th century France, and he wanted to take Sanskrit lessons. He had previously published a work that translates roughly to a history of the Jews, and after experimenting with discerning Hebrew and learning Hebrew, he wanted a richer understanding of other languages. Enter Harji Scharif. Harji Scharif was introduced to Alexander through a mutual friend, General Dumas. Harjri, who we will refer to as HS because I value my sanity, was known by many other names, such as Prince, and he used HS to sign many of his manuscripts and lessons. And while he was fairly well-to-do, living in a private home in a good suburb of Paris, he was treated with a bit of skepticality because his style was a little bit overdressed and his origins were quite nonspecific.
No, it's because of racism. Non-specific.
Yeah, meaning he had no lineage.
People thought that he might be Afghan or Turkish, but he never disclosed where he was from. So I think that that's part. I mean, yes, racism obviously exists in all time periods, but I think that him not being open with, like, his background led to suspicion in a different way, if that makes sense.
It added to the, you're a brown person and you're rich and, no, I don't like what's happening here.
Fair. But many of his manuscripts remain preserved in the Library of Sabans in Paris, some of which carry on the mystery and the tradition surrounding Agartha. So these Sanskrit lessons began in June of 1885, and from the get-go, the heading of the first lesson read as such. First lesson in the Sanskrit language to Monsieur Alexander.
Marquis Saint-Yves d'Averde.
To Alexander in Paris on the 8th of June 1885, with the Hindu date following, by teacher and professor H.S. Bhagwandas of the Great Agarthian School. So you're like, what the hell does that mean, the Great Agarthian School? And I have no good information for you. But during these lessons, he does learn more and more information about Agartha. Whether that this is at the time, there's a lot of secret societies popping up. So it's very, very possible that this is some society that he's starting. And while you're like, oh, secret, then why would he write it down? Well, this is somebody he's taking on to tutor and teach lessons to, and he might have wanted to bring him into the fold, and therefore it wasn't so secretive. People talk about the Freemasons all the time, but there's a Mason Lodge down the street. Just because a society is secret, it means that their practices are secret. It doesn't necessarily mean the society itself, nobody knows it exists. During these lessons, he learns more and more information about Agartha, but it appears to be more information than anything preserved in the accounts from Louis Jacolio. For example, he learns that the Agarthan people keep their own language called Vatanian, and that this supposed language is one of the oldest of its kind, lost in time to people that still dwell on the Earth's crust. So think of Linear A and Linear B type of situation. So Alexander went on to write a book on Agartha, but he had remorse as he was concerned that he had revealed more about Agartha than he had intended to release to the public, whether this was because he was worried someone else would find it, or he didn't want people to know how much information he knew. I couldn't tell you, but he had all the copies of this book recalled and destroyed, keeping only two of them.
That's just the dream, is to do that with any book. It doesn't matter what, but you release it and then destroy all of it except a couple. This is how you make a conspiracy theory from nothing. It doesn't have to be, doesn't matter what the book is about, as long as the title is a little weird.
You are 100% correct. I also stand by this.
This was all just a social experiment. This is my call now.
So he kept only two, and in 1910, after his death, it was then republished. Though whether that was in its entirety, we can't be sure. But a lot of it had to do with astral projection and trying to find Agartha. And there are many theories about how you get to Agartha. One of them is through either the North or South Pole. The other suggests that the location is deep under the Himalayas. So access through some type of subterranean cavern system in the Himalayas that just then further descends. So in 1947, Robert Byrd, a naval officer and a Medal of Honor recipient, alleged that while he was flying over the North Pole, he had flew into the Earth itself during a flight.
Yeah, did you, bud? Is that what you think happened? That's nice.
He then reported seeing various mammals, many of which resembled those that are extinct, such as mammoths. There's your mammoth. Before his plane was then flanked by several flying machines, a type of which he had never seen before, that escorted him to land. He described the men escorting him as being tall with blonde hair, and he claimed that eventually he met with the ruler of Agartha, who was also known as the Master of the Universe. Before either of you start chiming in, I did not write this. So, Master of the Universe and or Brahmatma.
Did they escort him? Did two tall blonde men escort him to the throne?
So, the Master then basically told him that he was allowed within the limits of Agartha because of his outstanding moral fiber.
What? This is just fan fiction. No, shut up. No more Robert Byrd, we're moving on.
Admittedly, I did paraphrase outstanding moral fiber, but that's basically what is said.
If it was anything indicating the morality of this person. We're done here. Who's next?
No, we're not. So this conversation is taken from a publishing from Falmina.org, allegedly taken from the diary of Robert Byrd. And from everything I've read, this diary was in fact preserved by his family, and many of his belongings were donated to Ohio State University. Ohio State was then going to publish his diary, but then thought that they would not make enough money on it, or maybe it was too fringe, or maybe they were just like, yeah, no, we're not going to publish this. But regardless, this is allegedly taken from that diary.
As if we haven't written fiction in our diaries. This bullshit. I hate you, Robert Byrd.
Yes, and because I'm quoting directly, I will put this at the top of the sources. And of course, you can find the list of all of our sources in a blog post in our link tree. Go find them. While you're at it, subscribe.
Like and rate and favorite and tell your friends and your uncle. Not that uncle, though.
So here's a couple different disjointed quotes. We have let you enter here because you are of noble character and well known on the surface world, Admiral. Surface world! I gasp.
Okay.
Yes, you are in the domain of the Eranani, the inner world of the Earth. We shall not long delay your mission, and you will be safely escorted to the surface and for a distance beyond. But now, Admiral, I should tell you why you have been summoned here. So he says summoned, not like you've accidentally fallen through the Earth, which is interesting. Our interest rightly begins just after your race exploded the first atomic bombs over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. It was at that alarming time that we sent our flying machines, the Flugelrads, to your surface world.
Fuck off, Robert Byrd. First of all, it's from 47, and second of all, he's an American politician? No, this is the wrong one.
I'm obsessed with this guy.
He's not a politician. He is like a war hero.
Robert Byrd for president.
He is also an Arctic explorer at this time. He received the Medal of Honor, blah, 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 all that jazz. The Flugelrads to your surface world to investigate what your race had done. That is, of course, past history now, my dear Admiral, but I must continue on. You see, we have never interfered before in your race's wars and barbarity, but now we must, for you have learned to tamper with a certain power that is not for man, namely that of atomic energy. Our emissaries have already delivered messages to the powers of your world, and yet they do not heed. Now you have chosen to be witness here that our world does exist. You see, our culture and science is many thousands of years beyond your race, Admiral. But what does that have to do with me? Your race has now reached the point of no return, for there are those among you who would destroy your very world rather than relinquish their power as they know it. Everything about this makes me wonder if he's just an activist. Like, this is the vehicle. Like, yeah. This is the vehicle in which
That's
put his activism. Okay, because hear me out. So Congress gives him the Medal of Honor. He feels like, I can't just go spout off anti-war sentiments.
Yeah.
But if I come back with this story, I'm not the one spouting anti-war sentiments and raising concerns over atomic warfare.
It's coming from a wiser source.
It's coming from the master of the universe. And you know who you absolutely can't, like, outprove? The master of the universe. That's kind of the top, I feel like.
Hey guys, I'm just the messenger. You know, but this blonde guy, you know, under the earth.
So this is now where we get into aliens. You knew we would get there eventually.
It's just sort of definitionally, they're not extraterrestrial. They are intraterrestrial.
Which is a whole sub-genre of extraterrestrials, of people that believe in aliens and believe that there are UFOs coming out of the ocean. There are UFOs coming out of the center of the earth. The master continued, in 1945 and afterward, we tried to contact your race, but our efforts were met with hostility. Our flugel rods were fired upon. Yes, even pursued with malice and animosity by your fighter planes. So now I say to you, my son, there is a great storm gathering in your world, a black fury that will not spend itself for many years. There will be no answer in your arms. There will be no safety in your science. It may rage until every flower of your culture is trampled and all human beings are leveled in vast chaos. Your recent war has only a prelude of what is yet to come for your race. We here see it more clearly with each hour. Do you say I am mistaken? No, I answered. It happened once before. The Dark Ages came and they lasted for more than 500 years.
Yeah, in Europe. Earth was doing pretty good. The rest of the Earth.
So what happened shortly after 1945? I want to see
1946.
Hands. What happened the year after that?
1947.
What happened in 1947?
So many bad things. Well, this Robert Byrd guy.
Roswell happened in 1947.
Ding, ding, ding.
Which was the first national publicized incident alleging aliens in that same way. Before, there was like, UFOs, what is that in the sky? And that was the first time that somebody like really, really cried aliens. And everybody else was like, oh, that's what all the weird sightings that we've seen are. They must have been aliens, too. So because this is so close to Roswell, and they're like, we started sending in 1945. And before Roswell, there was an uptick of UFO sightings.
Yeah, because there are planes more. Planes started being more common.
Also, it was World War II from 1939 to 1945. There's bombs, guns, and war going on all over the globe.
That's very true. It really feels like activism in a weird way, like in a completely different way that normal activists operate. For him to then repeat all this, okay, let's wait.
But no, hold on. Because to me, it feels like satire, like he is mocking the activists.
But he tells it to the president of the United States. One second. So the diary actually begins. I must write this diary in secrecy and obscurity. It concerns my Arctic flight of the 19th day of February in the year of 1947. There comes a time when the rationality of man must fade into insignificance and one must accept the inevitability of the truth. I am not at liberty to disclose the following documentation at this writing. Perhaps it shall never see the light of public scrutiny. But I must do my duty and record it for all to read one day. In a world of greed and exploitation of mankind can no longer suppress that which is the truth. It then concludes, March 11th, 1947, I have just attended a staff meeting at the Pentagon. I have stated fully my discovery and the message from the master. All is duly recorded. The president has been advised. I am now detained for several hours.
Yeah, yeah.
6 hours, 39 minutes to be exact. I am interviewed intently by top security forces and a medical team. It was an ordeal. I am placed under strict control via the national security provisions of this United States of America. I am ordered to remain silent of all that I have learned on the behalf of humanity.
No, you gotta yell it. It's in all caps, you yell it.
Oh. Incredible. I am reminded that I am a military man and that I must obey orders. December 30th, 1956. So this is 10 years after. Final entry. These last few years elapsed since 1947 have not been kind. I now make my final entry in this singular diary. In closing, I must state that I have faithfully kept this matter secret as directed all these years. It has been completely against my values of moral right. Now I seem to sense the long night coming, and the secret will not die with me. But as all truth shall, it will triumph, and so it shall. Admiral Byrd then repeated this experiment in Antarctica. So the first was in the Arctic Circle in the Arctic, then repeats it at the South Pole in Antarctica, which allegedly was successful, but I have no details for you.
I'd like to know.
No documentation.
Did he come back and he was like, yep, it worked, guys. Yep, there's definitely blonde people down there.
Can't be sure, but I don't think he ever publicly released this diary in any way, shape, or form. He did talk to several people about what happened. I believe National Geographic was actually one of them. He ended up leading many different expeditions, like a cervix expedition that lasted a year, an Arctic expedition that lasted 2 years.
We're talking about Byrd, yeah?
Yes. And he actually would go on where this is kind of omitted in a lot of literature about him because he was considered a polar pioneer because of how many different explorations that he did at the North and South Pole.
Where's my blonde manhole?
His first Arctic expedition was actually in 1928. He also was one of the first people to fly a plane over the North Pole, allegedly. He also was an active Freemason, just so that we're all aware.
He's doing drugs, is what he's doing. If I'm taking him sincerely, he's doing the drugs.
Operation Deep Freeze ran from 1955 to 1956, and that was actually for the Navy. So he had an entire team there. Also, Operation High Jump was his fourth Arctic expedition, and that was its code name. That was also part of 13 Navy support ships.
But obviously, what he was trying to look down there for was the Stargate and the chair that does all the shooty shoot.
The chair that does all the shooty shoot?
Am I wrong? Do you know exactly what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. And the thing is that now that I don't even remember what they actually call it in Stargate Atlantis, because now you've said the chair that does the shooty shoot, and that's all I can think about. So thank you so much.
I named it better.
You need, like, the Ancient's blood to operate it? Yeah. It does feel like Stargate Atlantis. Oh, no. All right. Alas, after the flight, a few years later, a cartographer, Dennis Rawlins, and a Nordic explorer, Bernt Belkin, came together to piece together the flight and what Byrd may have uncovered. They later involved a colonel by the name of William Mollett, and they looked at the flight data, including mileage and fuel usage, and concluded that the numbers didn't quite make sense for a trip to and from the Arctic, naturally casting doubt about this tale, though many claim this to be a disinformation campaign set up by the government, because again, going back to him having lots of interaction with Congress, having interaction with the president, even aside from this experience, he was already well entrenched, like, with political figures. Yeah. So the idea was, well, yeah, because he told them what he knew and they were worried, so they wanted to discredit the trip to begin with, which is fair. Like, because that all sounds crazy, yes, but have crazier things been declassified and found out to be true, also yes.
Not secret societies in the middle of the earth crazy, no.
As far as our brand of crazy, this is not the craziest we've been at. Like, our crazy threshold, this is like a 7, you know?
There's no Obama here. What's the point?
There's no Obama on the moon here. Like, I mean, really, it sounded exciting. And then I was like, no Obama in the middle of the earth. I'm so disappointed. I would have taken, like, what year is it? President Eisenhower. Like, what year is any of this? So, does the possible existence of Agartha have to mean that the earth is hollow? No, absolutely not. So let's talk about some underground cities that were built by man And perhaps some of these ancient stories and folklore passed down were talking about these kinds of similar cities, and their interpretation of it being subterranean meant the Earth's core because they didn't understand how the Earth worked.
But first, I want to harken back to our joking about pronouncing French.
What did Hudson say? This is us. We phone a friend. It's like, who wants to be a millionaire when we record?
Alexandre Santi.
Thank you to our special guest, Chip's partner, Hudson. Thank you so much. Let's talk about some underground cities that were built by man. Perhaps some of these ancient stories passed down. We're talking about similar cities, and they just didn't understand subterranean versus the Earth's core. In Derinkuyu, Turkey, there is a subterranean city that has room for 20,000 people built by man. They use, obviously, the existing caverns and structures most of the time, but still, a lot of these cities were then further carved out of the bedrock. Now, where's France? Petra, Jordan, was rather more carved into the cliffs than subterranean. Orvieto, Italy, was built / carved out by the Etruscans. There is also the possibility of cave systems being utilized that are similar to the Mammoth Cave system, which is enormous in terms of the span of land that it encompasses.
It's walkable.
Mm-hmm. It's far too much. It's far too deep.
In terms of numbers, the Marianas Trench is almost 7 miles deep. The largest hole ever dug is called the Kola Superdeep Borehole, dug by Russia. And actually, I'll have to maybe fact check myself because I'm not sure if this is Russia and or it was actually the Soviet Union, because it was a project that I believe started during the Cold War, as most things do. Yeah. It is in the Kola Peninsula, which is part of the Arctic Circle. Again, with that heavy interest in both the North Pole and South Pole, mm-hmm. not just by Russia, also by the United States, also by many other countries, but there is a deep longing for uninhabitable land.
That's useful, is the thing. Everyone wants a piece of Antarctica because someday it'll be useful.
But the thing is, with the Antarctica Treaty, there is a treaty in place that it can't be used to mine or get oil from or anything that you would think would be the push behind. What is the word I'm looking for? Anything that you think would be motivation to take Antarctica, like, oh, it's a brand new place to mine. It's a brand new place to drill for oil. Can't do any of that because of this treaty.
It's a little bit small scale mutually assured destruction. I'm watching you. You can't dig the hole. You're watching me. I can't dig the hole, but I'm watching you. Don't dig the hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun fact, parts of the Arctic Circle hit a record of 50 to 60 degrees hotter than has ever been recorded since they've been recording for 65 years.
This is not a fun fact. I was lied to at the get-go.
Isn't that crazy? Today.
Speaking of which, do we know what's up with the hole in the ozone layer? How's that going? I feel like I haven't heard about it a lot since like 7th grade. I have questions. We should Google that after. more facts. The deepest cave system, the Varakina Cave, I'm sorry, is 7,257 feet / 2,212 meters / almost 1.5 miles deep. And the Mammoth Cave system is only 105 feet deep, which in comparison to these large numbers and the feeling of panic, I thought would be much deeper.
But this guy is saying that he has flown in from two different locations.
Two different locations, accessed through the north and south.
And they're the same people.
Yeah, it's the same people, because the idea is that it's the core of the Earth and the core is acting as a mini sun, and that half of the mantle of the Earth doesn't exist because the Earth is hollow. So it's like there's crust, and then
there's nothing.
That's just crazy. That's crazy, though.
I have questions about gravity.
Yeah. Don't you know?
Not distance. It's not distance from one pole to the other pole, that it's the same people in between, and he took a flight and made it through and came back.
I'd like to discuss the tiny sun.
You know, you're really harshing my vibe with all these questions, Mikey. I just came here to have a good time.
But honestly, like, so there's no possible way. The Mammoth Cave is like the first layer of skin.
Oh, it's absolutely. Not... Absolutely. In fact, the Kola Super Deep borehole,
yeah.
They got almost 8 miles. They're not doing it anymore because the intense heat. Yeah. Also, there's reports of screaming and like crazy noises, and people say that it's a gateway to hell. Whole thing.
It's just heat and intense pressure, like making sounds. That's all that is.
You can't.
God, I am harshing everybody's vibe.
If you put someone in absolute silence, like as silent as it can be, you're gonna lose it. That's not. It's bad. You don't want to be silent. Your brain will not handle it well. So human brains can't be trusted.
So obviously, there is a lot more to this. Could go on all day. There are a lot of resources if you want to further read this out. Also, I just found a YouTube video that I wish I would have had at the beginning of this by Mr. Mythos on YouTube from the few minutes that I watched, kind of fast forwarding and seeing what he says because it's an hour long. It seems like he also has a lot of good information, probably even information that isn't contained here. So you can check that out. All right. It's Lost Cities. We're going to be starting a ranking system. We can't really start it yet because this is the only Lost City.
We're at one. And also, you know, the one that you're not even talking about, which is shocking to me.
Also, the Library of Alexandria. It's not a city, but it will be included.
How are we rating these? On likability that they exist or like...
Oh, no, that's not a fun
vacation destination.
Where you want, no, where do you want to permanently move to? Not vacation to.
Okay. Moving to long term. Got it.
Yeah. So that will be the rating system.
How many? Like 5 Hollow Earths out of 5 Hollow Earths?
Are they all blonde? That's what I need to know. Was it just 2 people or?
I hope they weren't all blonde just because of the time period of this feels a little too much like eugenics. So,
did you not pick up on that one already?
Oh, I picked up on it between the German and the blondeness. I don't like it. Also, that's one account out of the several accounts. So I choose.
How are they blonde if they're that close to their own personal sun?
The Earth's core is significantly less hot than the sun.
I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah.
During the pressure and heat. We couldn't survive. I'm not saying there isn't life down there, but I'm saying we couldn't.
And it would have been more than that because the crust thickness, so this isn't including the mantle, under continents, so not under the ocean, is 18 miles. Under the deeper parts of the ocean, like Mariana's Trench, etc., it's about 3 miles underneath the ocean. We have drilled 8 of 18 miles.
Right.
And cannot function.
And it's too hot. And it's too hot.
But it does lend to maybe if you're drilling in one area and you drill 8 miles down, then it's really hot because there is a lot of magma under that specific part of the earth. And that's assuming that everything is completely spherical and perfect. Whereas at another side of the earth, if you were to drill 8 miles down, maybe it wouldn't be as hot. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just mean in terms of composition, like the crust being thicker in some places than in the other, mantle being thicker in some places than in the others.
My thought there was if the Earth is stretched out and the poles are farther from the center than, say, the equator bit, that should be the colder bit, the whatever's closer. So they're digging in the Arctic, and that's the hot, and that's really hot there. I don't know.
But then we get into like weather and climate versus temperature underground, which I feel like don't necessarily have to correlate. Like just because the way that you experience weather, the sun beating on the equator and that being a hot temperature, I feel like doesn't necessarily equate with or 8 miles under the ground.
Yeah.
Has to be colder than in another place. We need a fucking geologist.
I don't have one of those.
Now, my physicist husband will be joining us, who is yelling at me from a different room.
We've got a lot of special guests this episode, guys. I was going to ask about Katie Rico. What kind of geologist is she? What does Jonathan know about Mikey? Go grab him.
Motorcycles.
The temperature rises as you go down because the pressure increases. And the only reason the sun is not like the Earth because the sun's pressure and temperature is high enough to cause fusion, whereas ours is just molten iron. Like
where
you said.
Where were you 15 minutes ago?
Liquid metal.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Let's give a round of applause for Musband.
Also, the core of the sun is estimated to be 27 million degrees Fahrenheit.
So your initial feelings are, this is crazy. I think that this is an interpretation. So the idea is that the first known whispers of this were interpreted by Louis Giglio in 1871, and that he heard this from various Brahmin within mm-hmm. Hinduism and different folklore that was taken while he was in
tripping
India visiting. Also probably that. So I think that this interpretation, this is one of those circumstances where there probably was a subterranean city carved out part of a mountain in the Himalayas or had some type of cave system that they were using as their town. We see this in every culture across the world almost, right? Anything that's not a modern culture. We see this a lot in Central America, even in the southern United States, in Arizona, for example. Where the fuck did we go, Chip?
Montezuma's Castle?
Montezuma's Castle.
There's some very cool shit. Yeah. This is not the part I've got problems.
what I'm saying is I think that the whole center of the earth thing and like this city, it probably did exist. But it became so entrenched in folklore and things about it that weren't true, or their interpretation of it was deep within the earth. Yeah, it was 100 feet beneath the earth. You know, like 100 feet.
Is upsettingly deep to a human brain.
And so I think that the foundations of it, just like with many lost cities, are probably true. It's just trying to separate what is likely to be true and what is definitely 100% fiction and has been expanded upon.
Well, let's be clear. I don't mind cities lost in a cave. It collapsed and then we found it. Or it's, you know, it wasn't collapsed. It just wasn't useful anymore. That sort of thing. No problem with a city in a cave. I've got a problem with a guy who flies a plane into the earth and is escorted by alien humans who bring him to the king. And he says, I'm talking to you. We summoned you because you're an upstanding citizen.
And you can understand my language and I can understand yours, even though we've been separated by thousands of years.
That is something that's absolutely never addressed. Usually it is addressed because, you know, people are going to have questions, right? So you automatically come up with something like, all of a sudden I was speaking a language I didn't understand. Or like, they were speaking a language, but they also knew our language, et cetera, et cetera.
It should be notable. Also, he's like, your race of blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, so you're not, which way are you using race? Let's start there. You seem to be using it in the human species way. What the fuck are you, blonde man who looks like a human master of the universe?
I think that it's supposed to represent that they don't see themselves as human anymore because they're so technologically advanced. It's almost as if they had ascended, or now they have entirely taken on their own evolution. And so they're no longer quite human. They're humanoid.
But they are very like, oh, you can see our technology is thousands of years ahead of yours.
Also, that's the word that you came up with to describe your robotic mechanical flying mechanisms.
Yeah.
Oh, enlightened one.
We did not even touch base on this, but there is also another section of Hollow Earth that believes because Hitler sent scouts to the poles to attempt to scout them, et cetera, that Hitler was trying to escape to journey to the center of the earth.
I now know why.
So maybe this guy was also a low-key conspiracy theorist that Hitler had journey to the center of the earth, as so to speak.
It had me for a while, and then the two blondes escorted me to the master of the universe, and then...
That's where it lost me, too, but I was already so deep in it, and I was like, this episode's tomorrow. It lost me in the exact same place, though, just so that you know. While you're here, make sure to subscribe, like, to give us a call or a text on the tip line at 313-355-3411. Until next time, I'm Mo.
I'm Chip.
And I'm Mikey.
You just listened to the Deep Dark Truth podcast. See you next time. And remember, your local cryptids want to meet you.